Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Call Her Mama. I'm so excited. Today, we're going to talk all about the nitty-gritty of what happens in the labor and delivery room. I feel like when you are not pregnant, when you get pregnant, and when you're about to go into labor, you have a lot of questions. There's a lot of scenarios playing on your mind. You've seen a lot of labor and delivery experiences in movies, and you're kind of wondering what yours is going to be like. So I've asked multiple people on Instagram questions, and today our guest is a labor and delivery nurse. Her name is Caitlin Boker. She's actually my sister, and she's an amazing nurse, and she's here to answer questions and share some of her experience from the hospital. So hi, Katie, why don't you tell us just how long you've been a nurse, maybe how many deliveries you've experienced, why you enjoy being a nurse, and we'll just start with that.
Hi, everybody. I have been a nurse now for going on 6 years in labor and delivery, postpartum, and being a baby nurse. I've done about, I think, almost 400 deliveries now. And what was the other question?
So why do you enjoy being a nurse? What made you choose this career path?
I chose nursing or chose labor and delivery?
I guess labor and delivery, because is that kind of where you hope to end up?
Yes.
Okay.
So going into nursing school, I planned on doing anything but labor and delivery, which it's funny how God changes your mind, because my first delivery I did, I sat in that room and ended up staying over by like 2 or 3 hours over my 12-hour shift because I wanted to be with her all the way to the end of delivery. So after that, I got home and I was like, wow, this is what I want to do for forever. Like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced. And I just loved every second of it. So after that, I was one of the only ones in my nursing school or my class that year that wanted to actually do labor and delivery. And I got lucky enough to do it as my preceptorship in my last semester and got a job shortly after at that same hospital.
Wow. And all of the reviews and stuff that patients leave about Katie, they always talk about just how much they know that she cares. And hearing what you do for patients, I literally would have been blown away if I was a patient and a nurse served me the way that you serve your patients. So just so you guys know, she's amazing at what she does. And also a disclaimer, anything that we talk about in this podcast is just based off of our experience and what we've seen personally. It's not medical advice at all. If you have any concerns or anything during your pregnancy or labor and delivery, talk to your doctor directly. So just a disclaimer, none of this is medical advice, just our experience. And I like how you explained a little bit about how your hospital differs from other hospitals. So if you want to share that again.
Yeah, anything advice wise or anything that we talk about, I do work for a high risk facility. So some emergency situations are a little bit more extreme, I would say, than community hospitals or other places people might deliver. And each labor and delivery also has different policies and protocols depending on what hospital you're at. So if something is different in your situation, definitely ask questions, ask your doctor what's best for you. This is just mine as a labor and delivery nurse in different facilities of what I've seen.
Awesome. Okay. Those are important protocols. Those are important disclaimers. So let's start off with a question that I feel like almost every woman thinks about. Do nurses judge unshaven lady parts?
No, I honestly couldn't even tell you the last patient delivery what anything looked like. It's not even on our radar. I mean, we see it so much that it doesn't even faze me. Like, I've literally helped a woman shave her legs because she was so self-conscious about the delivery. I've helped somebody paint their toenails. Like, if that's something that makes you feel more comfortable, then totally do it. But like, honestly, none of us care at all. Like, I okay. was worried about the exact same thing as a patient myself. And I'm like, well, I don't care if the patient does it. So I don't know why I'm so self-conscious about it. Who cares?
Yeah, man, you're like 39 weeks pregnant with like a mirror in the shower trying to shave your butthole.
You're like, and then try not to cut yourself. That's like a whole goal in and of itself.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you heard it here first. Nurses don't actually care what your lady parts look like, shaven or unshaven. I thought that we would just start off with something funny like that. Let's see. Another question that we got is, does your, I don't know if you can say vagina without getting like censored, but does your vagina go back to normal after the delivery? Because can you compare, what does 10 centimeters, give us a visual of what 10 centimeters looks like.
So you can't actually see your cervix unless you have a, like when you get a pap smear, you know how they put that speculum in and they like open it up to look inside?
Yeah.
You can't actually see your cervix being dilated. So when we are checking for 10 centimeters, we can only check with our fingers to feel how dilated it is because it's up high as the baby comes down. Once the baby's head is right there, the cervix is still going around the head. So we never actually really can see the cervix until like you would get a speculum and look inside. So, but the size of a 10 centimeters would almost be like the size of a bagel.
Oh my
God. So when I have like my, I can check, that's kind of like during nursing school, you like practice with like, okay, 1 centimeter is like a, you know, like a dime, and then like 2 and all the way up, and then 10 centimeters is like if you stretch your fingers all the way around like a bagel, you know, that's kind of like how big it is.
Wild.
But yeah, it goes back to normal.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, in my experience, it did go back to normal. I can feel some scarring from where I tore, but besides that, like, it's not like loose and flabby, and that's something I didn't know, you know, if that happened or not before I gave birth.
Yeah, one thing I didn't know until pretty recently, because I had a conversation with another mom, I was like, did you feel like there are certain muscles that like stretch kind of weird depending on like if I do a lunge now, I feel like there's a muscle in a certain spot that like pulls, like it's like scar tissue, like trying to go back to normal. Do you have that?
Not, well, I'm 2 years out. So, and that's, oh my gosh, I can't even believe I didn't even say that. Katie had a baby how?
11 weeks.
11 weeks ago. And that is another reason why I feel like this conversation will be so good, because it's so fresh in your mind.
Yes.
Okay, another, the burning question. How often do women poop on the table? Would you call it a table?
Yeah, you could say table. Delivery. Okay. Yeah, that's good. Not very often. Not as often as you think it would. I was super self-conscious that I was going to. I'm like, they all know I'm an L&D nurse. I'm going to have a mirror. I'm totally going to be able to see it, and I'm going to be mortified. But honestly, if you do, I am so like if my patient notices that they do, I'm like, dude, you are pushing so good. That's the right spot. Like if you poop, that means you are pushing like a pro. Good for you. And I'm like, that is a like my cheer on moment, because I'm like, you're totally getting it. Because when we tell them how to push, I always say, push like you have the worst constipation in your whole entire life. And that's how you're going to push the right way. So, wow. But you, it's not very often.
Okay, cool. I didn't poop. Did you poop on the table?
No.
Cool. I mean, I don't think I pooped. After I was doing, I did a podcast about my labor and delivery experience. I said, actually, like, they could have told me that I didn't, and I could have, and I'm not sure, you but
there.
Okay, cool. She vouches for me. That that covered my next question too, is like, what's the proper way to push? And like, you so, totally explained it so well.
We also tell, like what I tell my patients is, so you're going to put your hands behind your knees and pull back, like as if you're going to kind of do like a cannonball, and open up your knees really wide as far as you can, elbows off the table, so elbows out. And what you're going to do is with each contraction, you're going to try to push 3 times. You're going to take a deep breath in as if you're going to go swimming, hold that breath in, and we're going to count down for 10 seconds. And as soon as that 10 seconds over, quick breath again. And we're going to do that 3 times. The reason you want to do it quick is so that way you can keep the pressure of the baby's head down, because each time that you kind of take a break, baby will gradually go back up. So if you can do 3 pushes back to back, that'll keep baby's head in the canal and kind of help push them down at the same time.
Wow, that's extremely valuable information.
I always try to go over that like way before the patient's 10 centimeters. So they're not like in the, you know, game mode. And then they're like, wait, what?
So good. I mean, and people told me push like you're pooping, but that visual of what to do, literally, like if I was pregnant, I'd be writing that down and practicing.
Yeah. And actually there's some yoga videos that you can watch that kind of help teach you how to bear down and everything too. And I watched and did those before delivery.
Ooh, do you know the names of them?
Ooh, I'd have to get back to you. Maybe you can just like tag it. I'll send it to you.
Okay, cool. Or maybe just if you go on YouTube and type in, what do you think?
I did like, well, I did yoga for like labor prep a lot right before because I was going to be induced and I didn't want to be. And so I did like a lot of those trying to hope I'd, get baby to do her own thing, but she decided not to. So.
Maybe we can do another full story of your induction and everything.
Okay.
'Cause what would you call my when I said I was partially induced, what is that
Augmented.
term? Augmented?
Yeah. So like basically you were going into labor, but you needed help to get into active labor because you were in active labor yet.
Cool, yeah. So maybe we can do one about your full induction. This is a pretty like basic, pretty quick one. How has COVID changed your L&D protocols?
Oh, it's been a doozy. Well, the hardest thing I think for the patients is we're not allowed to have visitors anymore. And even for myself, I was only allowed to have my husband come in, and he once he was in, he was not allowed to leave my room whatsoever. So for like snacks, food, coffee, whatever, he was not allowed to go out of that room the entire time. And nobody was allowed to come and see me. And that's how our patients are too. And then if the patient is COVID positive, they're delivering by themselves right now. And I don't know if that's all hospitals. It wasn't the one I delivered at said that he'd be able to come either way. But my current hospital, they've changed it like 15 times. But right now, the patient herself has to be in there by herself. And then once the baby's born, the baby can stay in her room, but it's put in like an isolette. And the mom is required to put a mask on while breastfeeding and then put the baby back in the bassinet after she's done to try to keep her like the 6 feet apart.
Is that during, that's a COVID positive or that's every?
COVID positive.
Okay,
And then
then.
the other ones, it's just no, everything else is regular. They have to wear a mask the whole time. Like I had to wear a mask while pushing, which was like a feat in and of itself. But
Wow.
yeah, it just sucks with all the visitors, especially because my hospital has a lot of like the long-term antepartums is what it's called before they can come in at any time during their pregnancy and stay all the way till the end of pregnancy. And a lot of them don't have visitors right now either.
Oh my
So like
gosh,
we
that's
had one that's here for
heartbreaking.
like 10 weeks and she has nobody.
Wow.
I know, it's so sad.
What about when did you do your COVID test before going in?
3 days before. Because I was a scheduled induction. If I was gonna go into labor, I would have had to go in to labor and then had me tested. And then once I came back, whatever the result was or something, then he could come in, is what I was told. Ours, they make the patient wait until hers comes back negative before the dad can come in.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Okay, I'm like enough of, I mean, if you have any more questions, you can DM me on Instagram and I'll get information to you. But I'm like enough about COVID. All of us are tired of talking about COVID.
Amen.
So this next one is tear or episiotomy, which heals better? I've heard both ways, but she said her tear was easier. So
So they kind of don't really do episiotomies unless it's an emergency anymore. There's like older doctors that's part of their practice, but for the most part, like the AWON, recommendation is to just let you tear because typically the episiotomy, so basically they're going to cut where they think is going to rip to try to save, to try to make it a cleaner suture afterwards. But the problem with the episiotomy is I've seen where they've cut like one side and you tear on the other side too. So it's like, really, did they save it or would that have just happened either way? Who knows? So, like, they've really steered away from doing an episiotomy. Unless it's an emergency and we have to get baby out, and that's the only way that is when they're gonna cut. But
okay, that
healing wise,
totally
it's
makes.
pretty similar depending on how bad of a tear you have. But they're kind of rated the same degrees depending on tear or episiotomy, kind of heals the same way either way,
Okay, that makes sense.
from what I've seen.
Bouncing off that question, this one is how many women tear? That's the only thing I'm scared of for birth.
You most likely will tear. unless you have like a vagina of steel, which nobody really does. And most of the time,
a vagina of steel or a vagina of silly putty?
Both. I mean, I did, this is like super TMI, but I did a lot of perineal massaging, and that's what my doctor told me. And if you need to see how that is, just like Google it. But, and so I use like coconut oil, and I didn't do it. They wanted me to do it for like 4 times a day for 10 minutes. I'm like, shoot, nobody has that time. Like, I can't sit. Well, that's just so odd. Anyway,
like,
so I just
shame.
Did a little bit, and I was like, okay, I hope, I mean, if I tear, I tear, whatever. But I ended up having like not even barely a first degree, which is like the smallest tear you can have. And it was like almost where they could just say, oh, it was a skid mark, which was like not even a first degree. So I don't know if that worked, or maybe our family just births babies big or large fine. I don't know. But
how big?
8'6".
Yeah, that's a big baby.
Yours was bigger.
I'm like, that rubs the dust off my shoulder. No, I'm just kidding. It's like my biggest accomplishment in life is birthing a 9-pound, 11-ounce baby.
And you also only had a skid mark tear.
That was considered a skid mark?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That is probably like, I have vivid memories of stitches being like pulled when I would be like moving on my bed, trying to like get into a breastfeeding position.
Oh, you know what's
and
worse?
Then it just stings so bad when you pee. What is it?
Yes, having a freaking pap smear 4 weeks postpartum.
Oh, yeah.
I should have refused that.
Yeah, Katie went in for her postpartum checkup, and they at 4 weeks, and they gave her a pap smear.
I wanted to cry. I wanted another epidural.
Has anyone ever heard of that? I've never heard of that happening before. Nothing was inserted in me for like 9 weeks.
I almost cried on the table. I was like trying not to like kick her.
Bro, that's really gnarly.
I was like, Fern, I love you, but I'm going to kick you.
Someone said, what can you do to avoid not being able to get an epidural? So I'm pretty sure they're saying they want one. What are the scenarios when they can't get them?
Well, if you come into labor and you are what we call a stop and drop, aka you come in completely dilated and you're about to deliver in 10 seconds, is the only way that we're not going to give you an epidural. Even like we've had patients come in at 9 centimeters and we still do it. So, I mean, as long as you're not crowning, we can give you an epidural.
Okay. Yeah, I think, and two, is there a limit on if you get your epidural when you're like 4 centimeters? And is there a time when it like runs out? Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard people asking that, but really quick before, there is, depending on the hospital you're at, because my old hospital, you would only be allowed to get an epidural to like 7 or 8 centimeters, and you wouldn't be allowed to get one before 3. Current hospital, and even where I delivered, I could get it anytime. So that might be different depending on where you're going. So I would ask that before you go into labor. The running out part, so they have two different kinds of epidurals they can do. My current hospital does a combined spinal epidural. So they give you a heavy dose, like as if you were the same kind of thing they would do for a C-section, where it's like a heavy dose to take away the pain right away. And then after about 2 hours, that spinal dose wears off. Excuse me. And then the epidural is continuous, like your IV, until delivery after delivery when we turn it off.
Okay, that's really valuable. And that totally makes sense of why I felt so much at the end.
Yes, I did too. And it's not as strong towards, like, at the end you have so much pressure that it's not going to ever take away the pressure. It's only taking away sharp pain. And that's what the epidural is meant to do, is just take away the sharp pain, because we want you to be able to feel the pressure to know when to push. Because I've had before where a patient's epidural was so heavy that all of a sudden she calls me and she's like, yeah, I don't know what happened. The baby like kind of came off the monitor. And I come in and I heard somebody sneeze and the baby was in the bed. So,
oh my gosh.
I mean, she was fine, but she was sneezing, and that's what I heard. I'm like, wait, who just sneezed? And then I look back and she was in the bed already.
Wait, the baby
The
sneezed?
the baby. I walked in and I hear like achoo, and I'm like, who is that? Because like the dad and the mom are sitting right there, and we like pull back the sheet, and there was the baby. But her
Oh
epidural was
my.
so heavy, she didn't feel anything.
Wow.
So,
Tell me what you felt when you got your epidural.
ugh, I was so mad at this doctor. First off, he made me wait a whole hour, and I asked early because I knew like they take a while. Like, so if you want an epidural and you're starting to get towards your breaking point, ask for it 20 minutes beforehand because I feel like they always make you wait. So I had to wait a full hour, which I'm like, sir, did you forget about me?
Wow.
So he finally comes in and he's making dad jokes and he's like, time to lift you up for your oil change. I'm like, not now. Like, just do my epidural. So he let my husband stay in the room, but other hospitals might not. So like Wade ended up holding me during it, which was kind of cool. But he lifted me up and he's first like feeling my back with his hands. And what they do first is they like inject you to like numb it. That's the worst part because that feels like a bee sting. After that, I really just felt the pressure like of his hand and then like of him trying to find the right spot. But on a side note, I have scoliosis, so he had a hard time trying to find the right spot. So he poked one area, then decided to poke another area and not numb it. And I said, that's sharp. Can you please add more? And he's like, can you feel that? And I'm like, yes. And after like a few minutes of me like telling him, it's sharp, I finally turned around and was like, dude, I'm an L&D nurse. It is sharp. Please add more lidocaine. I can feel everything. And then finally he did. And then after that, I was so comfy and I fell asleep and it was wonderful.
Wow, yes. That kind of aligns too with my experience of the numbing is the worst part. I had a contraction while it was happening, but it was totally manageable and they got mine in like one shot. So a lot of people are really scared of getting the epidural. I don't know why. Maybe it was different when like our mom's generation was younger. Maybe it was different because a lot of that age group will say how painful that is, you know?
Well, and I think even a lot of people after, like, or during will be like, well, I don't want my back to hurt after. So I've heard that a lot. And it's pregnancy that messes up your back and like labor that messes up your back. It's not the epidural because it's not going in your spine, it's going between the spinal spaces. So your back's gonna hurt either way. Like, my problem was as I was allergic to the tape. So I had a really bad allergic reaction to the tape after. But other than that, I didn't have any issues with my back at all.
And did you have the same feeling as me as like when after you were home and everything, when you would bend over, it would almost feel like there was like a gap in your spine where you got the epidural?
No, I didn't feel that. I just had like a scab.
Okay. Mine felt like my spine had a gap in it, and it when I would bend over, it would feel like it was like
Pulling
I
right
don't
there or something.
yeah, something weird, like there was a leftover
My
something.
muscles felt sore there. Like I felt like I had gotten like punched in the back, but like not really. I didn't feel like a gap, but.
Okay. How often does a VBAC work out for your patients?
Actually, pretty good amount of time. I'd probably say there's only like one or two that really don't go well, but it's just like a, it's kind of like you're running the risk either way. Like you just kind of, I think, have to go in the mindset like, hey, if I need a C-section and that's what's healthiest for me and my baby, then that's just what's going to happen. And kind of like, I think, tell yourself that so that way you don't feel like you failed if your VBAC doesn't work well. Because you never know. Because sometimes there's a reason that you had a C-section in the beginning. Like whether your pelvis wasn't going to be able to fit that baby through, or, whatever it is, there could be a reason why you had one primarily. If you stalled out, whatever it is. So I think a lot of times I just tell my patient, like, I just want you to mentally prepare yourself just in case you do have to have one. I don't want you to feel like a failure because it's not your fault. It's, your cervix, your pelvis. There's different things that can go into play when it comes to having a successful VBAC.
That's great advice. And just in case people don't know, a VBAC is having a vaginal birth after a C-section.
Yes.
Awesome. if you're a pregnant mom and you have a birth plan, what would be the most like respectful way to communicate that with your nurse? Where, because, you know, let me see, think of how to phrase this. Just
how
if you have,
a bad stigma.
Yeah, birth plans and nurses, like have a bad stigma. And so what would be good advice on how to work together? Because nurses aren't against helping moms. Like, that's not a thing. Maybe some, but so yeah, just go ahead and share on that.
So, I mean, you'll totally find nurses that are anti-birth plan. And I honestly don't know why, because for me, like, I kind of had my own birth preferences for like myself. Like, I didn't want to be, you know, my water to be broken artificially. I wanted my water to break on its own, different things like that. But what I would say is if you have a birth plan, definitely like you can bring one in and like show your nurse and stuff. And I hope that you have a nurse that's nice, because this whole situation is so anxiety ridden and out of our control that like having a birth plan kind of gives you that peace, like, hey, like this is what I really want. But in a lot of situations, birth is just kind of like how life is. Like, you can't really control anything. It's just going to go how it's going to go. And so sometimes I think that people that do have birth plans are so set on what is going to be the plan that they can't differ from it whatsoever. And so I think it's like, yes, have your plan, but also be like open to if there's something else that is safer for you and your baby. Like, we don't want to go against the birth plan, but like if the baby doesn't look good on the monitor and it doesn't, isn't going to be healthy coming out, like we don't want that harm to happen to your baby. Like, we're trying to just do what's best for both of you. And, but if you have like a certain preference, like for me, how I approach not wanting my water broken is when I got there, I said, do you guys typically break water early during labor? Like, what's your guys's, you know, protocols? And she was like, most of the time we just let you break, it breaks on your own. I was like, perfect. That's exactly what I want. But if it would have been the other way, if somebody came in and said, hey, I'm going to break your water, then I would have been like, you know what? I don't want my water broken. I'm going to refuse for now, unless it's an emergency and baby, you know, needs it to have, you know, these things happen, or what it be. Then that's okay, you know?
Totally makes sense. Yes. So communicate it in a loving, kind way. Tell them you're open if medical intervention needs to be made, if it's an emergency. So kind of just have a good open communication line with your healthcare providers. I like that advice. Here's another one. If I have to be induced, is it going to be more painful than naturally going into labor? And you share on this, and then I want to share like my experience a little bit too.
Okay. I've not gone into labor on my own, so I don't know, but I've heard from patients that the ones that have had both, they were like, I would choose labor contractions over Pitocin contractions any day, because they're so much more extreme. But at the same time, Pitocin is like what your body's naturally producing. It's just a more concentrated version of it. So that's why it comes, I think, a little bit stronger, is because it's not like your body's like slowly titrating and being like, hey, let me give you a little bit more so you can have a stronger contraction. It's just like all of a sudden you're like, wham, bam, here's your contraction. And you're like, holy cow, that hurts so bad. So I've heard that it hurts worse.
Yeah. And I my water partially broke, and then I wasn't contracting at all from 4 a.m. to like 4 p.m. And so then they gave me Pitocin, and then it was like I got hit by a truck, and it just went from 0 to 100. And I'm hoping that with our, like, whenever we have our next baby, that I can experience like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just, it starts small and gets a little bit more, and
like
a little
bit more. Like, people to labor at home for a little bit and not have to just go straight to a hospital.
Yeah, and not be like, you know, knuckles white and just like, ah!
Stuck in a bed on a monitor 24/7.
Bro, yes. So in my experience with my, I'm so sorry, I forgot the word of what my induction would be called.
Oh, augmentation.
When my augmentation, it felt more painful, but then again, I have nothing to compare it to. So let's see. Let's open. We covered so much. I'd love to do multiple parts. And maybe, like, if you hear this podcast, and then you think of a question and you have a, you can totally DM me at kristen.lemon on Instagram. My voice cut out. And then we can do, like, now my voice cracked. We can do multiple different parts. Also, when we're filming this, it's 10 p.m. because we have children, and the only time our house is quiet is when they're asleep.
Yeah, and she woke up and thankfully Wade's on baby duty right now because
Is she still awake?
I think she's asleep now, but he had to go in there like three times.
Oh my gosh. Shane was recording a podcast upstairs because he's starting a fishing one, and I left the monitor on in his room. I'm like,
Good
your
luck.
podcast, only your podcast will get ruined if he wakes up, not
Are
mine.
you like me? I like sing the Hunger Games song as I walk out.
Yes.
Well,
I can't even do it. I'm laughing
poor thing.
whenever.
He's like on, 3 12s a week of me being go well, more like I'm gone for 15 hours overnight, and poor thing is all by himself for that entire time.
Oh my
Like, you're
gosh.
a trooper.
Whenever I'm like with any like friends or like you or like my sister-in-law late at night and we have to put our kids in the car to like drive home, I always do them like good luck getting home. May the children not scream their heads
Oh,
off.
the worst.
Feel really cool, really good ending right there. I think my brain also at 10 p.m. is not as sharp as it is during the day. And but thank you so much for taking the time to share that knowledge with us, and I hope that we can do more episodes, and
Yeah,
I
it
really want
was
to.
really fun.
Yeah, I had fun talking too. I really want to do another one on postpartum recovery and just both of us maybe like just talking through our experiences with that. So, you can listen to this podcast like on Spotify or on the Anchor app, and make sure and follow on Spotify and follow me on Instagram at kristen.lamon. I don't. Yeah, or you can message me and I'll call her and make her answer.
Yeah. That's probably
Okay.
more efficient. Yeah,
Thank you, Katie, for talking to us. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you guys have a great night or a great day or a great weekend, whatever it is.